Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're plunging into a health challenge that, well, it touches millions globally, often without them even realizing it. Osteoporosis.
It really is often called the silent disease, isn't it? Quietly weakening bones until, bang, a painful fracture happens.
Exactly. Often in the hip or spine wrist. It's the very first sign for many people.
Yeah.
And it's a profound issue, especially, you know, for our aging population and particularly for postmenopausal women.
Yeah, they're disproportionately affected. And the personal cost, the socioeconomic burden, it's just immense.
And while the conventional treatments, things like bisphosphonates or maybe hormone replacement therapy, are absolutely crucial, they really are the backbone of care. They do come with challenges, right?
They do. We definitely see patients struggle sometimes with side effects or maybe face issues with long-term adherence, simply because the treatment regimen can be quite demanding over time.
Which makes total sense.
And that's exactly why, you know, a growing number of people are looking towards, well, phytotherapy, herbal medicine as maybe a complementary option.
Right. So our mission today is really to provide an evidence-based kind of critical look at these traditional remedies.
Absolutely. We're here to help you understand the core mechanisms, specific herbs, and crucially, their safety profiles. It's about separating what's scientifically plausible from, well, the purely anecdotal.
That's right. The goal here is really to empower you with knowledge.
Yeah.
We want to help you understand how these herbs could potentially fit into a, you know, a comprehensive health strategy.
And always, always as adjuncts to conventional care.
Yes. Never as standalone solutions. It's about enhancing a holistic approach, not trying to substitute an established one. So let's unpack this fascinating intersection of ancient wisdom and modern science.
Okay. So to really grasp how these herbal interventions might help, we first need to get a bit more, like, say, granular on osteoporosis itself. Think of your bones not as like static, inert things, but as dynamic, living tissues. They're constantly undergoing this process called remodeling.
Like a construction site, sort of?
Exactly like that. Old structures are demolished, new ones are built, it's ongoing. But in osteoporosis, this delicate balance gets thrown way off.
Oh.
You get a deterioration of the bone's intricate internal scaffolding, what scientists call its microarchitecture.
Right, the internal structure.
Yeah, and this structural breakdown, combined with just low overall bone mass, makes the bones incredibly fragile, susceptible to fractures from even, you know, minor falls or just everyday stresses.
And the need for better solutions, or at least, like you said, better adjunctive solutions, it feels really pressing.
It is.
Because while those conventional treatments are essential, they're not perfect for everyone, are they? Some medications can cause, you know, pretty uncomfortable GI upset.
Definitely.
Or, in rare cases, maybe more serious side effects. And for some people, the regimen itself, taking the medication correctly, it can be quite strict.
It can, which makes long-term adherence a real challenge sometimes.
Yeah, and that creates this clear space, doesn't it? For complementary options that could potentially fill some of those unmet needs, or maybe just improve the overall patient experience alongside their prescribed care.
This is such a crucial point, and it really sets the responsible tone for our entire deep dive today. We are discussing these herbs as potential adjuncts to a comprehensive care plan. Let me say that again. Potential adjuncts.
Right. Not cures.
Definitely not standalone cures or replacements for prescribed medical treatments. It's about enhancing a holistic approach, not trying to substitute the established evidence-based one.
Okay, so with that clear understanding of the clinical challenge, let's explore the underlying science. How are these herbal remedies actually theorized to work in the body?
Well, as we mentioned, osteoporosis is fundamentally about an imbalance in that bone remodeling process.
The construction site analogy again.
Exactly. And a healthy person, the demolition crew, these cells called osteoclasts, which break down old bone, and the construction crew cells called osteoblasts, which build new bone. They're in perfect balance. But with osteoporosis, the osteoclasts, the demolition crew, they become overactive. They start outpacing the osteoblasts.
Too much breakdown, not enough building.
Precisely. And many of the herbs we're going to dive into seem to target the specific signals that control this delicate dance.
So what are some of those key signals?
Well, one of the absolute master regulators of bone turnover is what we call the Opdrankl-Rank axis.
Okay, that sounds complex.
It sounds, but think of it like a cellular conversation happening constantly in your bones, your bone building cells, the osteoblasts.
Yeah.
They secrete a protein called RankVoth. Think of RankL as a key. It's looking for a specific lock called Rank, which sits on the surface of immature cells that can become osteoclasts.
Ah, okay.
When rank allele sits into that rank lock, it basically tells these immature cells, okay, mature into active osteoclasts and start resorbing bone. It's the go signal for bone breakdown.
But surely there's a way to stop that, a brake system.
There is, exactly. The osteoblasts also secrete another really important protein called osteoprotegerin, or OPG for short.
Okay.
Think of OPG as a decoy receptor. It floats around and it intercepts and it binds to RankL before RankL can reach that rank lock on the osteoclast precursors.
So it stops the gas signal from getting through.
Precisely. OPG effectively neutralizes RankL, preventing excessive bone resorption. So maintaining a healthy ratio of OPG to RankL is absolutely vital for keeping bone density stable.
And this is where the herbs come in.
This is where it gets fascinating. Many promising herbs appear to work, at least in part, by either boosting OPG production or decreasing RankL expression, or maybe even doing both.
So they're effectively putting the brakes on that demolition crew.
Exactly. Shifting the balance back towards bone building.
Okay, so slowing down the breakdown is one side of the coin. What about boosting the building side?
Right. That's where stimulating osteoblast-promoting pathways comes in. We're talking about key signaling systems like the Wnt-Catton pathway and the bone morphogenetic protein, or BMP, pathway. Yeah. These are crucial signals that tell your body's stem cells, hey, differentiate into those bone-forming osteoblasts. And then they also enhance the function of those osteoblasts and help them survive longer.
So it's like providing the blueprints and the materials for the construction crew.
A great way to put it. Giving them the right signals to get to work, and just as importantly, to stay healthy and productive.
Makes sense. And you mentioned menopause earlier.
Yes. Another really significant mechanism, especially relevant for postmenopausal osteoporosis, is phytoestrogenic activity.
Right, because estrogen levels drop dramatically.
Exactly. And that sharp drop is a major driver of bone loss, because estrogen normally plays a role in keeping those osteoclasts, the demolition crew, in check.
Oh, okay.
Now, many plants contain compounds that structurally look a bit like estrogen. They can weakly bind to estrogen receptors in the body.
Phytoestrogen.
That's them. Now, they don't have the full power of, say, pharmaceutical estrogen, but these phytoestrogens can offer a definite bone protective effect by mimicking some of estrogen signaling. This is a vital mechanism to explore, particularly for bone loss linked to menopause.
And finally, there's a more sort of modern understanding linking bone loss to something else.
Yes, something we hear a lot about in overall health these days. Inflammation and oxidative stress.
Right, inflammaging.
Exactly. We now understand that chronic low-grade inflammation and the damage caused by oxidative stress are significant drivers of bone loss. They create this hostile microenvironment within the bone.
Hostile how?
Well, this environment actually favors the activity of the osteoclasts, the breakdown cells, and at the same time, it hinders the work of the osteoblasts, the builders.
So it tips the balance the wrong way again.
Precisely. Which means herbs with potent anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties become incredibly interesting. They can potentially help calm this hostile environment, restoring a more favorable balance for bone remodeling.
Like clearing out the pollution and debris from the construction site so the builders can actually work effectively.
That's a perfect analogy. Now, with all this exciting potential, mechanisms, pathways, we have to pause and underscore a really critical point.
Okay.
Natural does not automatically mean safe.
Right. That's a common misconception, isn't it?
It really is. And this is especially true for older adults who often manage multiple health conditions and might be on, you know, a cocktail of different medications.
Yeah.
There's a very real potential for direct toxicity with some herbs. For example, an herb called Sorrelia corylifolia, which we'll discuss, has been linked in some cases to liver damage, hepatotoxicity.
Okay. Okay.
And the supplement market, well, it's not always tightly regulated, so there's a risk of contamination. We've seen instances where raw chelated, for example, was found to contain toxic heavy metals like lead and arsenic.
That's scary.
It is. But perhaps the most significant risk, the one you absolutely must be aware of, is the enormous potential for drug-herb interactions.
Okay, tell us more about that.
Many herbs can affect critical bodily functions, things like blood clotting, blood sugar regulation, blood pressure.
Right, things that many medications also target.
Exactly. So they can interact, sometimes dangerously, with common medications like anticoagulants, blood thinners, antidiabetics, antihypertensives, potentially leading to serious, even life-threatening outcomes.
Okay, that's a huge flashing warning light there.
It needs to be.
And your point about safety is paramount. From a sort of clinical research perspective, it's also really crucial to understand the evidence we'll be talking about, right? Not all evidence is created equal.
Absolutely critical. We need to understand the hierarchy. A lot of the initial data, the early clues, come from in vitro studies, basically. Yeah. Studies done in test tubes or on cell cultures.
Okay.
These are great for identifying potential mechanisms, you know, the how it might work part, but they're a very long way from showing an effect in a living person.
Right. Cells in a dish are very different.
Very different. The next step up is often preclinical animal models. Frequently, researchers use overactomized rats, which mimic some aspects of postmenopausal bone loss in humans.
Okay, getting closer.
Closer. These studies provide a stronger rationale for why an herb might work in a human. But the gold standard, the evidence you can really sort of hang your hat on...
That's the human trial.
The human randomized controlled trial, or RCT, that's where an intervention, the herb or supplement, is directly compared against a placebo or maybe the standard medical care in real people.
And it's important to remember.
It's important to remember that for many of these herbs, while the evidence looks promising, maybe exciting even, it often remains preliminary. It might be based mostly on those in vitro or animal studies. We need to be really clear about that distinction as we go through them.
Okay, transparency about the evidence level is key.
Absolutely. Which brings us to our most important recommendation. We want to deliver this upfront, unequivocally.
Okay, let's hear it.
No herb or supplement should ever be used to treat osteoporosis without the direct supervision of a qualified healthcare professional.
Underline that. Bold it.
Yes. An expert, your doctor or another qualified practitioner, can properly assess your unique health status, review all your current medications for any potential interactions, and critically guide you on how to find high-quality standardized products that are actually likely to be safe and effective.
So it's really about empowering you, the listener, to have an informed conversation with your doctor.
Precisely. That's the goal. So with that essential groundwork and those crucial safety caveats laid out, let's begin our detailed analysis of some specific therapeutic herbs.
All right. With that crucial context firmly in mind, let's dive into the specifics. We'll explore the traditional uses of these herbs, the fascinating modern science peeking into how they might work, and just as importantly, hammer home those safety profiles and potential drug interactions.
Sounds good. And we've kind of grouped them by their most prominent mechanisms or traditional roles, just to try and make this mountain of information a bit more digestible. Okay, let's start with a group of herbs that seem to work, at least in part, by mimicking estrogen's bone protective effects. This is obviously a vital approach, especially thinking about menopausal bone loss.
Makes sense. First up, Epimedium, maybe better known as horny goat weed. Or yin yang hu in traditional Chinese medicine.
That's the one. In TCM, its traditional use is described as nourishing the kidney and reinforcing the yang. Now, these are TCM concepts relating broadly to strengthening fundamental vitality, supporting reproductive health, and very importantly here, building bone strength.
Okay.
It's actually a foundational ingredient in some major traditional anti-osteoporosis formulas used in China. The key active compound everyone focuses on is icarin.
Right.
So you can think of Epimedium, or icarin really, as acting a bit like a natural estrogen mimic specifically for your bones. It seems to help both build them up, stimulating osteoblasts, and slow down the breakdown, inhibiting osteoclasts.
So it's that kind of double whammy effect you mentioned.
It really appears to be, which could be particularly powerful for postmenopausal women. And the human evidence is actually quite strong here, relatively speaking.
Oh, really? What kind of evidence?
Well, there was a significant meta-analysis published in 2022. It pooled data from several randomized controlled trials, RCTs, and found that Epimedium supplementation led to significant improvements in bone mineral density, or BMD, and also reductions in pain scores.
Wow. Okay. RCTs are the gold standard, you said.
They are. And there was even an earlier RCT back in 2007 that showed Epimedium helped maintain BMD in postmenopausal women compared to placebo. Beyond bone health, it also has that reputation as an aphrodisiac, and there's some research suggesting potential anti-aging and anti-inflammatory effects, too.
Okay. Sounds promising, but what about the safety side? You flagged that earlier.
Right. Crucial point. It's not without risks. Common side effects can include things like dizziness, vomiting, dry mouth. And at high doses, there have been reports of more serious issues like spasms and even severe breathing problems.
Okay, so dose matters.
Absolutely. And critically, because it acts somewhat like estrogen, it's considered a big no-no for anyone with a history of hormone-sensitive cancers.
Like breast or uterine cancer.
Exactly. Avoid it completely in those cases. Also avoid it during pregnancy, as it could potentially harm the fetus, and if you have any bleeding disorders.
And interactions.
Yes, significant potential here. It can interact with blood thinners, anticoagulants, and antiplatelet drugs, increasing bleeding risk. It might also interact with antihypertensive medications, potentially lowering blood pressure too much, and it can interfere with liver enzymes, specifically CYP3A4, CYP1A2, and CYP2B6, which are responsible for metabolizing many common prescription drugs.
So definitely not one to just pick up off the shelf without advice.
Absolutely not. Always a conversation with your doctor is needed here.
Okay. Next in this phytoestrogenic category, we have resveratrol. That's the compound found in red grapes, berries, peanuts. It's quite famous, isn't it? For cardiovascular health, anti-aging.
It is quite well known. Its primary power in the context of bone seems to lie in it being a very potent antioxidant and anti-inflammatory that directly targets the degradation processes in bone.
Right. Tackling that inflammaging.
Exactly. But it also seems to have some of that phytoestrogenic action we just discussed, and research suggests it helps stimulate bone formation by activating key pathways like SIRT1 and AMPK.
So multiple mechanisms again. What about human evidence for bone?
Actually, quite strong here, too. There was a landmark trial called the Reshaw trial. It was a 24-month RCT involving postmenopausal women.
Okay.
And it found that resveratrol supplementation led to significant increases in BMD, both in the lumbar spine and the femoral neck key areas for osteoporotic fractures. It also showed a measurable reduction in a marker of bone resorption. Interestingly, the benefits seemed even greater when combined with vitamin D and calcium.
That makes sense. Is it generally safe?
Yes, resveratrol is generally considered very safe, especially at the doses typically used in studies, say up to 1,500 milligrams daily for several months. Some people might get mild stomach upset at higher doses, but serious issues are rare.
Cautions, interactions.
The main cautions are somewhat theoretical. If you have a bleeding disorder, it's wise to discontinue it about 2 weeks before any surgery, just in case it affects clotting. And again, because of that potential estrogen-like activity, caution is advised with hormone-sensitive conditions.
And drug interactions.
The primary concern is with anticoagulant or antiplatelet drugs, blood thinners again, because it might slightly increase bleeding risk. There's also a potential interaction with certain liver enzymes, the CYP450 system, but it seems less pronounced than with some other herbs.
Okay. Also in this group, you mentioned hops, Humulus lupulus. Most people just think of beer, right?
Yes, they do. But the female flowers of the hop plant have been used medicinally, often as a mild sedative. Recently, though, there's been interest in their bone health potential.
Why is that?
Because they contain compounds called prenyl flavonoids, and one in particular, 8-prenylnergenin, is known to be a very potent phytoestrogen.
Ah, so it mimics estrogen again.
Exactly. Which makes it theoretically relevant for postmenopausal or age-related osteoporosis by helping to slow bone loss. Animal studies have shown some promise here. One study in mice found hops extract significantly enhanced BMD.
But what about humans?
That's the catch. As of now, we have no human clinical trials specifically looking at hops for osteoporosis. The evidence is currently limited to those lab and animal studies.
Okay.
Safety. Generally safe in food and beverage amounts, obviously. As a supplement, doses around 35 milligrams daily seem safe for up to 3 months. Common side effects are what you might expect from hops: dizziness, sleepiness.
And the phytoestrogen warning.
Absolutely applies here. Because 8-prenylnergenin is quite potent, hop supplements are generally contraindicated for anyone with hormone-sensitive cancers. And avoid during pregnancy and breastfeeding due to lack of safety info. It might also theoretically enhance the effects of other sedatives.
And one more in this estrogen-mimicking group. Common sage, Salvia officinalis, the kitchen herb.
The very same. It has a long medicinal history, though. Traditionally, it's been used to reduce menopausal symptoms, particularly hot flashes.
Which hints at hormonal activity.
Exactly. It contains flavonoids and phytoestrogens that might offer a weak estrogenic effect, potentially helping to slow bone loss during menopause. There was one animal study in aged rats that showed some inhibition of bone breakdown.
But again, human trials for osteoporosis.
No direct human clinical trials specifically for osteoporosis. There are trials for other things, like hot flashes, cognitive function, even as a mouthwash. but not for bone density outcomes.
Okay. Safety is usually good for culinary herbs, right?
In normal culinary amounts, yes, absolutely safe. However, and this is a critical point for sage, large medicinal doses or certain preparations like essential oils can actually be toxic.
Toxic? How?
Due to a compound called thujone. It's neurotoxic and can cause serious problems like seizures, vomiting, rapid heartbeat, dizziness, convulsions.
Wow. Okay. So definitely not something to take in large amounts without expert advice.
Definitely not. Especially avoid high thujone preparations. Also avoid medicinal doses during pregnancy and breastfeeding. Drug interactions aren't extensively documented, but given the potential for toxicity, caution is absolutely warranted. Professional guidance is essential if considering medicinal use.
Okay, moving away from the direct estrogen mimics now. Let's dive into herbs that really tackle that underlying problem of inflammation and oxidative stress that inflammaging that drives bone loss. And these are often, you know, kitchen staples.
They often are. Let's kick off with probably the most famous anti-inflammatory herb out there. Turmeric, curcuma longa, and specifically its active compound, curcumin.
Right, everyone's heard of curcumin.
And for good reason. It's one of the most studied natural compounds globally. In the context of bone, it directly targets that chronic inflammation and oxidative stress.
How does it do that?
It inhibits pro-inflammatory signaling molecules like TNF-alpha and IL-6. It scavenges damaging free radicals. It modulates that crucial OPGYN-KL balance and even influences pathways like 1-tachinin. It's really multi-targeted.
So it's like a powerful peacekeeper for the bones, calming that inflammatory storm.
That's a great way to think about it. Now, in terms of evidence, while direct, large-scale human trials focused specifically on curcumin for osteoporosis outcomes are still somewhat lacking.
Oh, okay.
The preclinical evidence from animal studies is absolutely overwhelming. A 2025 systematic review of these studies showed curcumin consistently leads to significant increases in BMD in various bones, improved trabecular microarchitecture, and favorable changes in bone turnover markers.
So the animal data is very strong.
Very strong. And we do have human studies showing curcumin's benefits in related inflammatory conditions like osteoarthritis, often combined with other herbs like boswellia. Plus, it's renowned for a vast array of other potential health benefits.
And safety. Turmeric is generally safe.
Yeah. Its safety profile is considered excellent. It's very well tolerated by most people. Rare, mild side effects like headaches or diarrhea usually only occur at very high doses.
Interaction.
Minimal significant interactions.
Yeah.
There's maybe a mild theoretical effect on blood clotting at very high doses, so caution with anticoagulants is wise, but generally it's considered very safe.
Okay. And often paired with turmeric is ginger, Zingiber officinal. Another kitchen favorite.
Absolutely. And its active compounds, the gingerols and shojols, are also potent antioxidants and anti-inflammatories. Similar to curcumin, ginger works to create a more favorable bone environment by suppressing inflammatory factors and reducing oxidative stress, which indirectly dampens down that osteoclast activity.
Makes sense. Evidence for ginger and bone.
Again, large-scale human trials, specifically investigating ginger alone for osteoporosis, are still emerging. There was a recent RCT looking at ginger and curcumin co-supplementation in postmenopausal women with OP, which is interesting. But the preclinical data from animal models consistently shows ginger can improve bone density and structure.
And safety.
Ginger is incredibly safe. It's widely used therapeutically for nausea, vomiting, indigestion, pain. Side effects are rare and usually mild stomach discomfort at very large quantities.
Interactions.
Very minimal. Like turmeric, there's a mild theoretical anticoagulant effect, so use caution with high doses if you're on blood-thinning meds. But overall, it's an easy, safe addition to your diet for potential bone support. Next up, we have Boswellia serrata. This is Indian frankincense, or shalaki in Ayurveda. It's a gum resin extract used for centuries, primarily for chronic inflammatory diseases, especially arthritis.
Right, I've heard of it for joint pain. How does it relate to bone?
Its active constituents are called boswellic acids, particularly one known as AK beta. Their primary mechanism is inhibiting key inflammatory pathways, like TNF-alpha signaling.
Okay.
By calming inflammation, it indirectly reduces that RA and KL signaling we talked about, which in turn decreases osteoclast activity and bone resorption. So it's like putting a direct brake on the demolition crew that's being spurred on by inflammation. Some studies suggest it might also promote osteoblast activity.
What's the human evidence like?
The human data is very strong for osteoarthritis. Multiple RCTs show Boswellia significantly reduces joint pain, improves mobility, and may even positively affect cartilage health.
but for osteoporosis specifically.
Direct human trials specifically for osteoporosis outcomes are still needed. However, given that inflammation is a known driver of bone loss, its powerful anti-inflammatory mechanism is highly relevant. It's a strong candidate based on mechanism.
Safety profile.
Generally considered safe and well-tolerated in clinical trials, the most common side effects are mild gastrointestinal issues like nausea or diarrhea.
Any contraindications or interactions to be aware of?
It's best to avoid it during pregnancy and breastfeeding simply due to a lack of extensive safety data in those groups. There's a theoretical possibility it could interact with immunosuppressant medications, so caution is advised there. And it might potentially inhibit some liver enzymes involved in drug metabolism, but this needs more research.
Okay. Then there's rosemary, Rosmarinus officinalis,
yeah.
Another familiar culinary herb often linked with memory support.
Exactly. And beyond its lovely aroma and flavor, rosemary is actually quite rich in essential bone minerals like calcium, potassium, and magnesium, plus vitamins K and C.
Oh, interesting. Direct mineral content.
Yes, plus its active compounds like carnosic acid and rosmarinic acid have well-documented powerful anti-inflammatory and antioxidant effects, similar to turmeric and ginger.
So tackling inflammation again, what does the research show for bone?
Animal studies are promising. They've shown that rosemary extract can lead to significant increases in BMD and bone mineral content, BMC, in models of glucocorticoid-induced osteoporosis, which is a common type of medication-induced bone loss. It seems to help normalize bone metabolism markers.
But human trials for osteoporosis?
Similar story to some others. No direct human clinical trials specifically for osteoporosis outcomes yet. The evidence is based on the preclinical data and its known anti-inflammatory antioxidant mechanisms. There are human trials using rosemary extract for other things like skin aging or cognitive function.
Safety. This food, so generally okay. Mm-hmm.
Excellent safety in normal culinary amounts. Medicinal doses are generally safe too, but very large amounts could potentially cause stomach irritation, kidney damage, or even seizures in susceptible individuals due to its convulsant property.
Okay, so caution with very high doses.
Yes. And a key contraindication. Avoid medicinal doses during pregnancy. It might potentially encourage menstrual bleeding or uterine contractions, raising concerns about miscarriage risk.
Good to know. Drug interactions.
No known severe drug interactions are widely reported, but again, caution with very high doses or if you have pre-existing conditions like seizure disorders. Always best to consult a healthcare professional if considering medicinal amounts.
And a real standout you mentioned in this anti-inflammatory category was thyme. Thymus vulgaris.
Yes, thyme. It's more than just a seasoning. Its active compounds, primarily thymol and carvacrol, are potent antioxidants and anti-inflammatories. Animal studies have shown it can significantly inhibit bone loss, improve BMD, and even increase plasma levels of calcium and vitamin D3. One study even found it more effective than rosemary in an animal model.
Okay, strong preclinical. But you said there was human data.
This is where it gets really exciting. There have been recent human clinical studies. One investigated giving postmenopausal women with osteoporosis 500 milligrams of thyme extract twice daily for 6 months.
And what did they find?
They found a statistically significant increase in both bone mineral density, BMD, and T-score compared to baseline levels, and also compared to standard treatments like calcium vitamin D or the bisphosphonate drug alendronate alone.
Wow. An increase in T-score. That's significant.
It really is. Even more impressively, when thyme extract was added to alendronate therapy, the improvements in VMD and T-score were even greater than with alendronate alone. This suggests a powerful synergistic effect with conventional treatment.
That's a huge takeaway. Humble thyme might actually boost the effects of standard OP meds.
The evidence certainly points that way. It suggests thyme isn't just potentially preventing loss, but might actually help build bone back, especially when used alongside standard care. It's definitely one to watch and discuss with the doctor.
Absolutely. What about safety and interactions for thyme?
Generally, excellent safety, safe in food amounts, and likely safe short-term as a supplement in studied doses. Some mild stomach upset or dizziness can occur.
Caution.
Use caution if you have hormone-sensitive conditions, although the evidence for strong estrogenic effects is less clear than for some others. Like rosemary, it may slow blood clotting, so the standard advice applies. Stop 2 weeks prior to surgery and use caution if taking anticoagulants or antiplatelet drugs. It might also potentially interact with certain anticholinergic drugs or estrogen therapies.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit and look at some herbs deeply rooted in traditional Chinese medicine, known specifically for their actions on strengthening the body's vital systems. including bone.
Right, a fascinating category. Let's begin with Salvia miltiariza, also known as Dancin or Red Sage. Not to be confused with common sage we just talked about.
Okay, Dancin, what's its traditional role?
In TCM, it's famous for invigorating blood and breaking blood stasis. You can think of this as improving microcirculation, clearing blockages, enhancing the delivery of nutrients, and supporting healing processes throughout the body.
And that's relevant for bone health.
Absolutely essential. Good blood flow to the bones is crucial for delivering the nutrients needed for remodeling and repair. Mechanistically, Dancin is quite interesting. It contains lipid-soluble compounds called tansinones.
Okay.
Tansinones are potent inhibitors of osteoclasts, the bone breakdown cells. They seem to interfere with RNKL signaling and, notably, inhibit an enzyme called cathepsin K, which is directly involved in breaking down the bone matrix.
Very targeted.
Yes. And it also contains water-soluble compounds, salvinolic acids, which promote the activity of osteoblasts, the bone builders, partly via that 1-catenin pathway. Plus, they are powerful antioxidants and anti-inflammatories and may have mild estrogen-like effects.
So multiple beneficial actions again. What about human data for Dancin?
The human data is quite extensive, actually, but it primarily comes from clinical trials conducted in China, often using Dancin as part of multi-herb TCM formulas for osteoporosis. A review looking at 38 such trials between 2014-2024 found consistent efficacy rates, typically between 77% and 96%. Animal studies also strongly support its bone-building effects, with one showing it increased BMD by 35% when combined with calcium.
Okay, sounds impressive, but you flagged safety concerns earlier.
Yes, Dancin requires significant caution despite its benefits. While generally considered possibly safe when taken orally short-term, it can cause side effects like itching, upset stomach, or drowsiness.
But the main concerns are interactions.
Exactly. The most critical issues are its effects on blood clotting and blood pressure. It can significantly thin the blood, creating a serious risk of bleeding when taken with anticoagulant drugs like warfarin. It potentiates warfarin's effects.
Okay, that's major.
It is. It can also lower blood pressure, potentially leading to dangerous hypotension if combined with antihypertensive medications, especially things like calcium channel blockers or ACE inhibitors. And standard advice. You must stop taking Dancin at least 2 weeks before any surgery due to the bleeding risk.
So the bottom line is strict medical oversight is absolutely essential, especially for elderly patients who are often on these exact types of medications.
Couldn't agree more. Professional guidance is non-negotiable with Dancin. Okay, next up in the TCM classics is Rhizoma drinariae, or Gusuibu.
Gusuibu. That translates to mender of shattered bones, right?
That's exactly right. The name tells you its primary traditional use, healing damaged bones, ligaments, and treating osteoporotic fractures. It's considered a cornerstone herb in TCM for bone trauma and weakness.
What makes it work?
The active components are believed to be the total flavonoids from Rhizoma drinariae, often abbreviated as TFRD. This includes compounds like naringin. In fact, TFRD has been developed into a licensed government-approved medicine in China specifically for treating osteoporosis called Qingu capsule.
Wow, okay, so it's actually used as a prescription drug there.
In that standardized form, yes. Mechanistically, Gusuibu is considered a powerful rebalancer of bone remodeling. It appears to have a dual action, strongly stimulating bone formation pathways like 1-catenin, BMP, while also inhibiting bone resorption by regulating the OPG and KL axis.
Building up and slowing breakdown, the ideal combination.
Exactly. And the human clinical data here is notably strong. A systematic review and meta-analysis published in 2017 looked at 6 RCTs involving over 800 patients with osteoporotic fractures.
And the results?
It showed that treatments, including Rhizoma drinariae, led to significant improvements in BMD and overall therapeutic effect compared to conventional treatments alone, both when used by itself and in combination. So this one truly stands out in terms of direct clinical evidence for fracture-related outcomes.
That's very compelling. What about safety and interactions for the mender of shattered bones?
Here's another major advantage. Its safety profile appears excellent. It was well tolerated in the clinical trials, with only mild transient gastrointestinal symptoms being the most commonly reported side effect.
And interactions.
Remarkably, there are no known significant drug interactions reported for Rhizoma drinariae.
That's a huge plus, especially compared to Dancin.
It really is. It makes Gusuibu a potentially very attractive adjunctive option, given its efficacy and apparent safety. The main traditional caution is related to TCM diagnoses like yin deficiency with heat signs. But from a Western perspective, it looks very safe. Okay, Moving on to Panax notoginseng. This is also known as Sankey or Tianqi. It's a highly valued herb in TCM.
What's it traditionally used for?
Primarily for stopping bleeding, removing blood stasis, similar concept to improving circulation, relieving pain, and treating traumatic injuries. Its blood-moving property is believed by TCM practitioners to be key to supporting bone health and accelerating fracture healing.
Interesting connection. What does modern science say?
It has complex pharmacology containing various saponins, like ginsenosides, similar to regular ginseng, flavonoids, and polysaccharides. These compounds give it multi-targeted actions relevant to bone. It's anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, possibly has some estrogenic effects, and importantly, it promotes angiogenesis, the formation of new blood vessels.
Which is crucial for healing, especially fractures.
Exactly. It also seems to regulate key bone pathways like wontakatinin and BMP.
Human evidence.
The human evidence is what I call moderate. A 2025 review looked at 8 clinical trials, mostly using Sankey within formulas, for treating osteoporotic fractures and found relatively good therapeutic effects. There was also one 12-week RCT showing it increased osteocalcin, a marker of bone formation, in postmenopausal women with osteopenia, so promising but often studied in combination.
Okay, safety profile.
Generally well-tolerated for short-term use. However, and this is a critical safety consideration, there are concerns about potential liver and kidney toxicity associated with long-term use of Panax notoginseng.
Ah, okay, similar to some other potent herbs.
Yes. It's also generally contraindicated during pregnancy and for those with hormone-sensitive conditions like breast or uterine cancer due to its potential estrogen-like effects.
And interactions.
Major interactions are a concern. It can significantly interact with warfarin and aspirin, increasing the risk of bleeding. It might also interact with the drugs metabolized by the CYP1A2 liver enzyme. Given the toxicity concerns and interaction potential, professional guidance is absolutely critical, especially for long-term use or in elderly patients. Let's touch on Ligustrum lucidum, the glossy privet fruit, or Nuzen Z in TCM.
Okay.
This one has been used for over 1,000 years, primarily as a gentle tonic to tonify liver and kidney yin. In TCM theory, this relates to addressing aging symptoms, including those linked to bone health, like lower back weakness. It has a reputation for being nourishing and highly safe.
What are its mechanisms?
Modern research shows its bioactive compounds, like oleanolic acid and saladroside, help improve calcium balance. They seem to increase calcium absorption from the gut and reduce its excretion by the kidneys, partly by influencing vitamin D receptors and calcium transporters. It also helps regulate calciotropic hormones like PTH and vitamin D, and inhibits RNKL-induced osteoclast formation. It also has mild phytoestrogenic and antioxidant effects.
So it acts like a fine-tuned manager for calcium in the body.
That's a good way to describe it, ensuring calcium goes where it's needed for bone. The preclinical data supporting these mechanisms is quite robust.
But the human evidence?
That's where the gap is. There's a significant lack of high-quality human clinical trials, specifically investigating Ligustrum lucidum for osteoporosis outcomes. It's used in TCM formulas for other indications, but direct evidence for bone density is missing.
What about its safety? You said it has a reputation for being safe.
Yes, its safety profile appears excellent. Animal studies and clinical trials for other uses suggest it's very well tolerated with a high margin of safety. Reported side effects are usually mild and transient, like thirst or dizziness.
Anything critical to know about safety?
One crucial distinction. The medicinal product used is the processed dried fruit. It's important because the raw, unprocessed berries and leaves of the privet plant are actually toxic if ingested. So, source and preparation matter immensely here.
Good point. Drug interactions.
There's very little information available, which usually suggests the risk is presumed to be low, but it hasn't been extensively studied.
Okay, how about Angelica sinensis, commonly known as dung quai or dengue in TCM? Sounds familiar.
Very familiar, especially in women's health. It's often called the female ginseng. It's a quintessential TCM herb for nourishing the blood and is extensively used for gynecological issues, menstrual irregularities, cramps, menopausal symptoms like hot flashes.
And the connection to osteoporosis.
Its relevance comes primarily from its use in managing menopausal symptoms, making it pertinent to postmenopausal osteoporosis. There's also emerging research. A 2024 study identified specific compounds in dung quai that showed potent osteoclast inhibitory activity in cellular tests. It's also a key component of a famous TCM formula, Dengue Buxu Tang, DBT, which has been shown to promote osteoblastic differentiation.
So, some direct cellular evidence now, but human trials for OP.
still sparse for Dong Quai as a standalone treatment for osteoporosis. The efficacy is mainly inferred from its use in formulas like DBT. The new compound discovery is exciting, but it's still very early cellular level research.
Safety profile.
Safety requires careful attention with Dong Quai. Common side effects can include bloating, loss of appetite, or diarrhea. A more significant concern is photosensitivity. It can make your skin much more sensitive to sunlight.
Okay, good to know for people going outside. Contraindications.
Yes, several critical ones. Avoid during pregnancy. It may stimulate uterine contractions and increase miscarriage risk. Avoid if you have bleeding disorders or are scheduled for surgery soon. And due to potential estrogenic effects, avoid with hormone-sensitive cancers.
Interactions.
Significant interaction potential with anticoagulants like warfarin, increasing bleeding risk. There was also a reported interaction with the ACE inhibitor lisinopril in an animal model, leading to anemia. So careful consideration and professional guidance are needed. Let's talk about Rhamnia glutinosa, specifically the processed form known as Xu Di Huang.
Xu Di Huang, another TCM cornerstone.
Absolutely. It's a fundamental kidney tonifying herb in TCM, believed to nourish yin and blood. It's considered the emperor herb in one of the most famous classical formulas, Lua Di Huang Pill, LWDHP, often used for age-related conditions.
How does it relate to bone?
Strong preclinical support here. Animal studies using models of both glucocorticoid-induced and ovariectomy-induced osteoporosis show that Rhamnia extract can lead to significant increases in BMD and improvements in bone microarchitecture.
Mechanisms.
It seems to have a dual action. It promotes bone formation by enhancing osteoblast proliferation and differentiation, boosting enzymes like ALP, and increasing key transcription factors like RUNX2. Simultaneously, it inhibits bone resorption. One of its compounds, Catalpol, inhibits Ornkel-induced osteoclast formation and helps modulate the OPG-Ornkel balance.
Human evidence.
Mostly indirect, primarily coming from studies on the LWDHP formula, which contains Rhamnia as the lead herb. One clinical study found LWDHP increased femoral BMD in postmenopausal women who fit the TCM diagnosis of kidney deficiency. Large cohort studies in China also suggest LWDHP use might be associated with lower fracture risk, but direct trials on Rhamnia alone for OP are limited.
Safety and interactions.
Generally considered possibly safe for short-term use, not enough reliable information regarding pregnancy or breastfeeding.
Key interactions.
Yes. It may interact with anti-diabetes medications, potentially lowering blood sugar too much, hypoglycemia risk. It might also interact with antihypertensive drugs, potentially causing hypotension. Standard advice. Stop taking it at least 2 weeks before surgery. Briefly, Cornus officinalis, Shanzuyu, or Japanese Cornel. Another key kidney-tonifying herb, often paired with Rhamnia in formulas like LWDHP and Zuogi pill.
Traditional use.
Addresses age-related weakness, lower back pain, frequent urination symptoms linked in TCM to declining kidney essence and thus relevant to bone health. Pharmacologically, it's multi-targeted, promotes osteoblast proliferation, 1-catenin, BMP pathways, inhibits osteoclast differentiation, MAPK, AKT pathways, has immunomodulatory effects, and supports vascularization in bone.
Human evidence for OP.
Again, largely inferred from its role in formulas like LWDHP. Strong animal studies show increased BMD and improved microstructure, but we are awaiting dedicated RCTs on the single herb specifically for osteoporosis.
Safety interactions.
Generally seems well tolerated based on traditional use and formula studies, but specific modern safety data and drug interaction studies for the single herb are quite limited. May have mild anticoagulant effects, so caution with blood thinners. And one more in this TCM section, Eucomia ulmoides, Dujong, or hardy rubber tree.
Dujong, what's its reputation?
A classic TCM herb used to tonify the liver and kidney, strengthen bones and muscles. Primarily prescribed for lower back and knee pain or weakness, often considered a yang tonic. Modern studies support this. Research on total flavonoids from Eucomia leaves, TFEL, in ovariectomized rats showed it increased bone formation markers, decreased resorption markers, and improved femoral microstructure.
Mechanisms.
It regulates the OPG-Ornkel pathway. And fascinatingly, one study found it beneficially regulated gut microbiota composition in osteoporotic rats.
Oh, the gut-bone axis connection.
Exactly. An emerging and really exciting area of research. How our gut microbes influence bone metabolism.
Human evidence for Dujong.
Still in the early stages, there's a completed RCT looking at it for mild knee osteoarthritis, but results are pending. Direct human trials specifically for osteoporosis are still needed.
Safety.
Animal studies suggest no toxic side effects. However, comprehensive human safety and drug interaction data are limited, so caution is advised, especially for people on multiple medications.
All right, let's round out our deep dive with a few more fascinating herbs showing promise for bone health, each with kind of its own unique profile or origin.
Sounds good. Let's start with one from Ayurveda, Cissus quadrangularis, known as Hajad or veldtgrape.
Hajad. That name means bone setter, doesn't it?
It does. Reflecting its use for centuries in Ayurvedic medicine to treat bone fractures and joint pain, it contains compounds thought to have anabolic building effects, plus calcium and antioxidants. Mechanistically, it seems to decrease osteoclast activity and inhibit RNKL-induced osteoclastogenesis. Animal studies consistently show improved bone health markers.
What about human evidence, especially for fractures?
The evidence for fracture healing is quite compelling. Studies involving patients with jawbone fractures showed Cissus significantly increased osteopontin, a key marker of bone healing. In patients with facial fractures, it helped reduce pain and swelling and increased calcium and phosphorus levels.
Okay, strong for healing. What about preventing loss, like in osteoporosis or osteopenia?
There's some data there, too. One study involving over 100 postmenopausal women with osteopenia found that Cissus supplementation delayed bone loss compared to placebo over 6 months. However, it didn't lead to a significant improvement in BMD in that particular study, more like stabilization.
Still potentially useful. Safety and interactions.
Generally considered safe for most people, reported side effects are usually mild things like headache, intestinal gas, dry mouth. As with many herbs, avoid during pregnancy and breastfeeding due to lack of extensive research. But here's a big plus. Cissus has no well-documented significant drug interactions.
That makes it quite attractive, doesn't it? Especially compared to some of the TCM herbs with interaction risks.
It does. Its apparent safety profile, combined with the evidence for fracture healing and potentially slowing bone loss, makes Cissus quadrangularis a strong candidate for adjunctive use, particularly in recovery after a fracture.
Okay. Next, Cuscuta chinensis. 2CZ or Chinese daughter seed. We touched on TCM seeds before.
Yes, this is another one traditionally used in TCM to tunify the kidney, prevent aging, and specifically treat osteoporosis. It's sometimes even used as a functional food ingredient. Preclinical evidence is quite good. One study on glucocorticoid-induced osteoporosis in rats found Cuscuta extract significantly increased bone length, weight, and BMD.
How does it work?
Seems to have that dual action again. Suppresses bone resorption by reducing osteoclast numbers and regulating rank ULPG, while also boosting bone formation by upregulating key factors like RENX2 and enhancing collagen synthesis.
But human trials.
That's the major gap. A significant lack of direct human clinical trials, specifically for osteoporosis. There are large ongoing observational studies in China looking at traditional medicine use, which might yield more data later.
Stacy seems okay.
Based on limited data, yes. An animal toxicity study noted no issues. One small human trial reported only a few mild side effects, like flatulence or headache, with no adverse changes in liver or renal function. Drug interaction information isn't readily available. Now, for a very unique substance, Shilajit.
Ah, yes. The resin from the Himalayas. Sounds almost mythical.
It does have that aura. In Ayurveda, it's revered as the conqueror of mountains and destroyer of weakness. A rasayana, or rejuvenating substance, traditionally used to enhance energy, stamina, and, yes, bone density.
What's in it that helps bone?
Its primary bioactive component is thought to be fulvic acid, which is known as a potent antioxidant. The theory is that by reducing oxidative stress, Shilajit helps protect bone cells and maintain a healthier bone environment.
Is there human evidence for Shilajit in bone health?
There is some, though it's limited but promising. One key study was published in 2022. It involved 60 postmenopausal women with osteopenia.
And the results?
The study found that Shilajit supplementation over 48 weeks significantly reduced markers of bone loss, inflammation, and oxidative stress compared to placebo.
That's quite a direct human finding for osteopenia.
It is. It definitely warrants more high-quality research, but it's a very encouraging result directly in the target population.
Now, Shilajit. I feel like I've heard warnings about contamination.
You absolutely have, and this is the critical safety issue with Shilajit. Raw, unprocessed Shilajit resin collected in the mountains carries a very high risk of contamination with heavy metals like lead, arsenic, and mercury, as well as potentially harmful fungi.
So you can't just use the raw stuff?
Absolutely not. It is essential to only use purified Shilajit products from highly reputable manufacturers who provide a certificate of analysis, COA, verifying purity and testing for heavy metals and other contaminants. Do not touch it otherwise.
Okay, crucial warning. Assuming it's purified and verified, is it safe then?
Purified Shilajit is generally considered relatively safe, with potential mild side effects like sore throat, headaches, or GI upset.
Interact.
It may potentially interact with blood thinners due to effects on clotting and possibly with diabetes medications. So even with purified products, caution and medical advice are needed. Let's briefly mention Acaranthes bidentata, Nushi or ox knee, another TCM herb with a strong traditional reputation for bone and joint disorders.
Ox knee. Interesting name.
Yes, thought to strengthen the liver and kidney, in TCM terms, fortify bones and sinews, and importantly, guide other herbs downwards in formulas, often towards the lower body and joints. A 2024 meta-analysis of 11 animal studies found it was effective in promoting BMD increase, likely via inhibiting resorption and enhancing formation.
Human data.
Again, primarily formula-based, RCTs have found formulas containing Acaranthes effective for relieving bone pain and improving lumbar spine BMD in postmenopausal women. Direct standalone trials are still needed. Safety seems generally good, but comprehensive data is limited. Professional consultation is essential. Have a Tinus percordifolia, Guduchi, or Amrita, another Ayurvedic star.
Guduchi, the nectar of the gods, known for immune support.
Exactly. It's revered as a powerful, rejuvenating, and immunomodulatory herb, traditionally used for fevers, diabetes, arthritis, jaundice. Its anti-inflammatory and antioxidant activities are relevant to inflammatory joint conditions and potentially bone health.
But the osteoporosis link?
That's where the evidence falls short currently. There's a lack of clinical trials investigating its effects specifically on osteoporosis in humans, especially in the elderly. Existing human studies focus more on things like allergic rhinitis or immune function.
Okay. Safety is a concern here too, isn't it? Especially with immune modulation.
Yes, this is significant. While the stem extract seems possibly safe for short-term use, Tinospora should critically be avoided by individuals with autoimmune diseases like multiple sclerosis, lupus, or rheumatoid arthritis.
So why is that?
Because its immune-stimulating properties could potentially worsen symptoms by making the immune system more active.
That makes sense. Interactions?
Yes. Potential interactions with anti-diabetes medications, risk of hypoglycemia, and immunosuppressant drugs, it could decrease their effectiveness. Stop 2 weeks before surgery. And Astragalus membranaceus, huangqi, a very fundamental herb in TCM.
Huangqi, the ketonic, for energy and immune functions.
Precisely. Used to strengthen the body's protective energy, weiqi, boost the immune system, and help the body adapt to stressors. Solid preclinical evidence shows it can stimulate the proliferation of bone marrow stromal cells, osteoblast precursors, and help prevent bone loss in animal models, often studied in combination with other herbs like angelica in the DBT formula.
But human studies for osteoporosis.
Again, no high-quality human studies demonstrating the effectiveness of standalone Astragalus specifically for OP outcomes. Evidence for its other uses is often considered low quality as well.
Safety concerns. It sounds like an immune booster.
Exactly. While generally well-tolerated with minor side effects like rashes or GI upset, it carries the same critical warning for people with autoimmune diseases, RA, lupus, MS, as Tinospora. It could exacerbate symptoms. Not recommended during pregnancy, breastfeeding, or for children.
And interactions sound likely.
Yes, Astragalus has an extensive potential drug interaction profile. This includes immunosuppressant drugs, reducing their effectiveness, possibly estrogen-blocking cancer treatments, anticoagulants, bleeding risk, antihypertensives, diuretics, and even lithium. Professional guidance is absolutely critical with this one.
How about Nigella sativa? Black cumin seed, sometimes called black seed oil. It has a rich history.
It does, famously quoted as being a cure for everything but death. Its main active component is thymoquinone, TQ, a potent antioxidant and anti-inflammatory.
How might it help bone?
By inhibiting inflammatory cytokines like IL-1, IL-6, and the NFPU pathway, which regulates both inflammation and osteoclast activity. Animal studies suggest it might be beneficial for diabetes-induced osteoporosis and fracture healing.
Human evidence.
This is an area of emerging clinical research. There are ongoing or recently completed clinical trials investigating its effects on bone density in postmenopausal women with osteoporosis or osteopenia, so we need to wait for those results, but it's actively being studied.
Safety consideration.
Generally considered safe for short-term use, up to 3 months. However, there are critical warnings. Avoid during pregnancy may slow or stop uterine contractions, and stop before surgery may slow blood clotting and lower blood pressure. It's also contraindicated for those already on anticoagulant therapy or with high bleeding risk or advanced kidney liver disease.
Interactions sound likely too.
Yes. Nigella sativa has a long list of potential drug interactions. Risk of hypoglycemia with diabetes medications, hypotension with antihypertensive drugs, increased bleeding risk with anticoagulants. It also inhibits key liver enzymes, CYP3A4 and CYP2D6, which can alter the levels of many common prescription drugs. This necessitates extreme caution and professional oversight. Let's touch on Sustanche deserticula rucongrong, the desert ginseng.
Another ginseng.
A metaphorical one. Highly prized in TCM as a tonic for kidney deficiency, impotence, infertility, and constipation, especially in the elderly. The TCM theory that the kidney dominates bone makes it relevant for osteoporosis.
Is there modern evidence?
Yes, strong scientific evidence from overectomized rat models. Sustanche extract showed significant anti-osteoporotic activity, regulated bone turnover markers, improved cancellous bone structure, and reversed the decrease in BMD.
Interesting mechanism.
Very interesting. A recent metabolomics study suggested its effects might be primarily mediated by regulating lipid metabolism, specifically pathways related to steroid hormone biosynthesis and arachidonic acid metabolism, which are correlated with bone remodeling.
Fascinating link. Human data.
No direct human clinical trials for osteoporosis yet. There are ongoing trials testing other compounds for accelerated aging or OP, but not Sustanche itself.
Safety and interactions.
This is a major limitation. Sustanche has not undergone rigorous modern safety evaluation. While used traditionally, there's very limited scientific data on its safety profile or potential drug interactions. Extreme caution is advised, and it should only be considered under expert guidance.
Okay, how about Carthamus tinctorius, honghua, or safflower? We use the oil in cooking.
Right, the oil is common. But the flower, honghua, is used in TCM to invigorate the blood, dispel blood stasis, and alleviate pain, often for menstrual issues or traumatic injuries. The seed has been used in folk medicine for bone formation and osteoporosis. Preclinical studies support this, showing safflower seed extract promotes osteoblast proliferation, and a diet with safflower buds significantly increased femoral BMD in overectomized rats.
Human evidence.
Again, a lack of high-quality human clinical trials, specifically for osteoporosis, especially in the elderly. Evidence is largely anecdotal or formula-based.
Safety. Safflower oil is safe.
The oil is safe, yes. But the herb itself has potential side effects and a major contraindication. Do not use during pregnancy or by those planning to become pregnant. It's a uterine stimulant and can potentially cause miscarriage.
Critical warning. Other cautions.
Use caution with diabetes or liver problems. Allergic reactions are possible, especially if allergic to other plants in the Asteraceae family, like ragweed or daisies. Interactions aren't well documented. And with Thunia somnifera, ashwagandha, the popular adaptogen.
Right, known for stress reduction. How does that link to bone?
Indirectly, chronic stress and elevated cortisol levels are known contributors to bone loss. So by helping modulate the stress response, ashwagandha might offer an indirect benefit. There are also animal studies suggesting its active compounds with anandamide may have direct beneficial effects on improving BMD.
Human evidence for OP.
Lacking for osteoporosis specifically, numerous human trials confirm its benefits for stress, anxiety, sleep, and athletic performance, but not bone density yet.
Safety. Generally okay.
Right. Generally considered safe for short-term use, up to 3 months. Long-term safety isn't as well established. Common side effects include drowsiness or mild GI upset. However, there's a rare but serious concern. Potential for liver injury, based on some case reports.
Okay, that's important. Contraindications.
Yes, quite a few significant ones. Avoid during pregnancy and breastfeeding. Avoid with autoimmune diseases, RA, lupus, thyroid disorders. It might increase thyroid hormone levels. And hormone-sensitive prostate cancer.
And interactions.
Numerous potential drug interactions. With diabetes meds, high blood pressure meds, immunosuppressants, sedatives, anti-seizure meds, and thyroid hormone medications. Must stop before surgery. Requires medical supervision due to the contraindications, liver concern, and interaction potential. Briefly, Marinde officinalis redox, DTN. Another TCM kidney yang tonic.
What's it for?
Strengthens sinews and bones, disperses wind dampness. Classically used for lower back pain, impotence, joint pain. Preclinical evidence from overectomized rats shows the extract inhibits bone loss, component of the arginine decoction formula.
Human trials for OP.
Lack of human clinical trials for OP. supported by TCM history and animal models only at this point. Safety profile, not well documented in modern science, though used safely in TCM. Theoretical cautions about stimulating kidneys or affecting blood sugar. Avoid pregnancy breastfeeding.
What about Dioscorea apposita, Chinese yam or shan yao? That sounds like food.
It is. The root is used as both food and medicine. It's considered a gentle qi tonic in TCM, nourishing the spleen, digestion, and kidney, longevity, bone health. It's a key ingredient in the Lue Di Huang pill, LWDHP.
Does it have hormonal effects? I think I've heard that about yam.
This is a common point of confusion. It contains diastogen, which can be converted to steroid hormones like progesterone in a laboratory. However, the human body cannot make this conversion, so eating yam doesn't directly boost your hormone levels in that way.
Okay. Good clarification.
Now, some research does suggest potential indirect hormonal effects, maybe influencing ovarian cells or hormone levels in animals, or serum estrone in menopausal women, but the mechanism isn't direct conversion.
So, evidence for osteoporosis?
Essentially lacking. It's often promoted for menopause and bone health, but these claims aren't well supported by sufficient evidence for osteoporosis outcomes. Animal studies showed increased BMD, but this hasn't been replicated reliably in humans.
Safety.
Very safe as a food. As a supplement, large amounts might cause GI issues. The primary safety concern revolves around those potential, albeit indirect, hormonal effects. So avoid with hormone-sensitive conditions like breast cancer or uterine fibroids. Avoid during pregnancy breastfeeding. Might interact with estrogen therapies like birth control or HRT. Let's talk about Google, Kumiphora whitei, another Ayurvedic resin.
Google, what's its traditional role?
In Ayurveda, it's considered kapha-reducing, used to strengthen bones and reduce sluggishness and tissue repair. It's a key ingredient in Lakshadi Google, a formula specifically for bone problems. Its active compounds are googlesterones.
What does modern research say?
Most research has focused on its effects on cholesterol, primarily by inhibiting a receptor called FXR. Its traditional use for bone suggests anti-inflammatory and tissue-strengthening properties might be relevant. There is a phase 2 clinical study registered in India investigating Google for osteoporosis osteopenia, so more data may be coming.
Any related clinical efficacy?
Yes. One outcome study on 30 participants with knee osteoarthritis found that Google provided significant improvements in pain, stiffness, and function with no reported side effects. This shows clinical benefit for degenerative joint conditions.
Safety concerns.
Mild side effects like headache, nausea, or skin rash can occur. However, there are rare but serious reports of liver issues, including severe enzyme elevation and even acute hepatic failure in a couple of case reports.
That's significant. Interactions.
This is probably the most significant interaction concern with Google. It may induce CYP3A4, a crucial liver enzyme responsible for metabolizing a vast number of common medications, statins, calcium channel blockers, many others.
So it could make other drugs less effective.
Exactly, by speeding up their breakdown. This is a major concern, especially for elderly patients on multiple prescriptions. Requires medical supervision due to the liver risk and the significant interaction potential. How about triphala, another Ayurvedic staple?
Triphala, that's the three fruits blend, right? Mm-hmm. Amalaki, Bibitaki, Haritaki.
That's the one. Not a single herb, but a cornerstone Ayurvedic formulation. Considered a tridoshic rasayana, meaning it's rejuvenating and suitable for balancing all body types.
How does it relate to bone health? It's mostly known as a digestive tonic or laxative.
Its fame is definitely for GI health. The relevance to bone comes more indirectly, stemming from its well-documented systemic anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties. It's rich in beneficial compounds like tannins, flavonoids, and vitamin C, which could help combat the age-related systemic inflammation associated with conditions like osteoporosis.
Human evidence for OP.
Indirect and limited for osteoporosis specifically. No direct clinical trials looking at BMD outcomes in the elderly. Some studies in India have explored its role in asthikshaya, the Ayurvedic term for OP, usually after other treatments. A phase I studied did confirm it has immunostimulatory effects without adverse effects.
So, primarily a gut health supporter with potential systemic benefits.
Safety. Its safety profile is considered excellent. It's been used safely for centuries and is very well tolerated by most people. The main effect is a mild laxative action.
Interactions.
No major documented safety concerns or drug interactions, making it one of the safer traditional formulations to consider for general wellness, which might indirectly support bone health. Let's consider Acanthopanax xanthicosus, Siberian ginseng or Siwujia.
Siberian ginseng, but it's not a true ginseng, is it?
Correct. It's botanically different, but used similarly as an adaptogen, a ketonic in TCM, primarily for fatigue and improving physical performance.
Bone connection.
Yes. Preclinical evidence is quite interesting. An active compound, eleutheroside E, shows anti-inflammatory and anti-osteoporotic actions. Studies suggest it promotes proliferation in the growth plate cartilage, increases IGF-1, an important growth factor in osteoblasts, potentially stimulating longitudinal bone growth. It also stimulated BMD in mouse tibia, regulated gut microbiota, and prevented bone loss in overactimized mice.
So strong preclinical signals again. Human data.
Lack of human clinical trials specifically for osteoporosis. Evidence is limited to traditional use and those promising preclinical studies.
Safety concerns.
Likely safe for short-term use. Side effects can include nervousness, restlessness, headache, diarrhea, or insomnia typical of stimulants.
T contraindications.
Yes. Use caution or avoid with high blood pressure or certain heart conditions like palpitations or irregular heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Avoid during pregnancy breastfeeding.
Interaction.
Has a complex potential drug interaction profile. Could interact with caffeine either stimulants, may decrease the effectiveness of warfarin, potentially interacts with immunosuppressants, estrogen-blocking cancer treatments, anticoagulants, antihypertensives, diuretics, and lithium, requires careful medical supervision.
And briefly, Prunus persica, peach kernel or taurine?
Yes, the kernel of the peach seed, a powerful herb in TCM used to invigorate blood circulation and resolve blood stasis, and also to moisten the intestines for constipation. Its theoretical role in bone health comes from the idea that improving circulation aids healing, especially fracture healing.
Scientific evidence for OP.
Very limited. Recent reviews mention its traditional use, but there are no specific preclinical or clinical studies found focusing on its mechanism or efficacy for bone density or osteoporosis. Benefits are inferred from general anti-inflammatory, antioxidant properties seen in other contexts. No direct human OP trials.
Cleavity. Sounds potent.
It is potent. Critical contraindication. Avoid during pregnancy and heavy menstruation. It's a strong blood mover and uterine stimulant, potentially causing miscarriage or excessive bleeding. Also use caution with breastfeeding or digestive weakness.
Interactions.
May have anticoagulant effects, so caution with blood thinning medications. Should only be used under the guidance of a qualified TCM practitioner due to its potency and contraindications. Now, before we synthesize, let's just briefly highlight two specific traditional formulas that are particularly relevant. These really embody that principle we discussed, that the whole formula is often greater than the sum of its parts, offering multi-targeted effects and, importantly, sometimes mitigating the toxicity of individual ingredients.
Okay, good examples to illustrate the concept.
First, Erzien decoction, or EXD. This is a classic TCM formula, actually developed in the 1950s initially for menopausal hypertension, but now widely used for various menopausal syndromes, including osteoporosis.
What's in?
It typically contains six herbs: Epimedium, horny goatweed, Curculigo orchioides, Morinda officinalis, Bajitian, Angelica sinensis, Dongquai, Felidengen chinense, and Anna marina asphodeloides. It's carefully designed to balance yin and yang energies, combining warming and cooling herbs.
And the pharmacology.
Quite impressive. Studies in osteoporotic rats show EXD attenuates bone loss, partly by reducing inflammatory markers like TNF-alpha and preventing osteoblast apoptosis, cell death. Network pharmacology studies suggest synergistic actions from key ingredients like icarin, berberine, and ferulic acid, which together inhibit osteoclast resorption and promote osteoblast proliferation.
Clinical relevant.
It's widely used clinically in China for menopausal osteoporosis, and the animal models are supportive. However, direct large-scale RCTs specifically validating its efficacy compared to standard care are still generally needed.
Safety. Sounds complex with six herbs.
It is complex. The safety depends on the interplay between the individual herbs and their potential interactions, for example. We know Epimedium and Angelica have hormonal and blood-thinning effects. These are theoretically balanced within the formula, but it absolutely underscores why such complex traditional formulas should only be prescribed by a trained and qualified TCM practitioner who understands the nuances.
Okay. And the second formula example.
Shan Lingubao capsules, or XLGB. This one is interesting because it's a modern Chinese patent medicine, specifically approved by the China Food and Drug Administration, CFDA, back in 2002 for the treatment of osteoporosis.
So it has official regulatory approval there. What's in it?
It's another potent six-herb combination, including some we've discussed. Epimedium, Dipsacus asper, a bone attendant herb, Salvia miltiariza, Danshin, Soralia coralifolia, Guzzi, Romania glutinosa, Shudi Huang, and Anna Marina S. fuddleoids.
Soralia, that's the one with the liver toxicity warning.
That's the one, which makes XLGB particularly interesting from a formulation perspective. Pharmacologically, it's a multi-pronged attack on bone loss, providing phytoestrogenic effects, invigorating blood, directly mending bone, Soralia's traditional function, and tonifying the kidney. Mechanistically, it's shown to downregulate RANKL and upregulate OPG.
What does the clinical evidence show for XLGB?
The clinical evidence is quite strong. Systematic reviews have found it provides beneficial effects on quality of life and pain relief in osteoporosis patients. Crucially, some studies suggested increased BMD to a similar degree as standard treatments like calcium vitamin D or even the bisphosphonate drug alendronate. One trial also showed it increased alveolar bone density in patients with periodontitis.
And the safety, given the Soralia content.
This is where the TCM formulation principles seem to shine. Clinical trials generally report a favorable safety profile, often finding no significant additional adverse events when XLGB was added to conventional medications, despite it containing the potentially hepatotoxic Soralia coralifolia.
How is that possible?
It highlights that TCM principle of using minister or assistant herbs, like salvia and Romania in this case, which have liver protective aspects, to potentially mitigate or buffer the toxicity of a powerful emperor herb like Soralia. It allows for a potentially safer overall therapeutic effect.
Fascinating example of traditional pharmacodynamics. Caveats.
Of course. It still contains herbs with significant hormonal and blood thinning effects, epimedium, salvia. So the same contraindications and potential for drug interactions we discussed for those individual herbs must still be carefully considered. It absolutely requires medical supervision, ideally from someone knowledgeable in both conventional and traditional medicine.
Okay, wow. We've covered a huge amount of ground looking at dozens of herbs. Stepping back, what are the big overarching themes or patterns that emerge from all this?
Several powerful themes really stand out. Perhaps the most striking is the convergence of so many different herbs, from different traditions even, onto that OPGRANKL signaling pathway.
Right, the master regulator of bone breakdown.
Exactly. We saw potent TCM herbs like salvia miltiariza and Soralia coralifolia, Ayurvedic resins like boswellia, even compounds like resveratrol. A primary mechanism for many seems to be inhibiting that RANKL signal that drives osteoclast formation. It's like different cultures independently discovered various ways to flip the same crucial switch for bone health. It shows a remarkable alignment between traditional wisdom and a very specific modern molecular target.
That's fascinating. What's another key theme?
The second major theme is the absolutely pervasive role of inflammation and oxidative stress, that inflammaging concept, as a key contributor to bone loss.
Yeah, that came up again and again.
It did. Chronic low-level inflammation constantly promotes RANKL expression, essentially telling the demolition crew to stay overactive. And this is where many common culinary herbs shine. Turmeric, ginger, rosemary, thyme. They are potent anti-inflammatories and antioxidants.
So their benefit isn't just general health, it's directly relevant to the bone environment.
Precisely. Their ability to reduce inflammatory cytokines directly impacts that OPGRANKL balance. This provides a really strong scientific rationale for why a healthy anti-inflammatory diet rich in these very herbs isn't just, you know, vaguely good for you, but is a foundational evidence-based strategy specifically for supporting osteoporosis prevention and management.
Makes perfect sense. And the third big theme?
The third recurring theme is that double-edged sword of phytoestrogenic activity.
Right. Helpful for postmenopausal bone loss, but potentially risky elsewhere.
Exactly. For women experiencing the estrogen drop after menopause, which is a central driver of accelerated bone loss, herbs like epimedium, resveratrol, hops, maybe red sage, offer a potential natural way to mimic some of estrogen's bone protective effects. It's a powerful therapeutic avenue.
But the consistent warning
is the potential contraindication for women with a history of hormone-sensitive cancers, like breast or uterine cancer. This dual nature, beneficial for bone, potentially risky for other hormone-dependent tissues, is absolutely crucial. It highlights why personalized assessment and a conversation with your healthcare provider are non-negotiable when considering these herbs. #tag 3.2, a power formulation beyond the single herb. And this really leads us to another concept that's central to traditional medicine, but often gets lost in our Western single supplement mindset. the power of the formula.
Right. You gave those examples of EXD and XLGB.
Exactly. You almost never see really potent herbs like Soralia corollifolia used alone in TCM. They're typically part of a carefully constructed formula. This isn't just random mixing. It's based on centuries of empirical observation and refinement.
Why formulate? What are the advantages?
Two main reasons: synergy and toxicity mitigation. From a pharmacological perspective, these formulas represent sophisticated multi-target therapy.
More comprehensive than a single drug.
Often, yes. A single traditional formula, like Erjian decoction or Xianling Gubao, might simultaneously act on multiple pathways relevant to osteoporosis. It could inhibit ARA-KL, stimulate wontocatinin, provide systemic anti-inflammatory effects, maybe improve microcirculation all at the same time. A single pharmaceutical drug usually targets just one specific pathway. So the formula offers a more holistic, integrated approach.
Like having a whole team of specialists working on the bone construction site, not just one plumber or one electrician.
That's a great analogy. And the second key aspect is that sophisticated toxicity mitigation.
Using the XLGB formula with the potentially toxic Soralia as an example.
Exactly. In that formula, Soralia is combined with minister herbs like Salvia miltiarisa and Romania glutinosa, which are known to have liver protective and nourishing properties. The TCM theory, supported by the clinical safety data for XLGB, is that these accompanying herbs buffer or mitigate the potentially harsh effects of the emperor herb, Soralia,
allowing for a safer overall therapeutic effect.
Precisely. It allows the formula to harness the bone-mending power of Soralia while potentially reducing the risk of liver damage. This demonstrates a deep, practical understanding of pharmacodynamics refined over centuries. It's a profound lesson in how complex natural compounds can be intelligently combined for optimal benefit and safety. #Trag3.3 final perspective and recommendations.
Okay, so synthesizing all this incredible information.
Yeah.
It's clear the picture is complex, lots of promising preclinical data, but the human clinical evidence varies quite a bit, doesn't it?
It really does. It's a spectrum. Some herbs clearly stand out with stronger human evidence directly related to osteoporosis outcomes. Based on our review, Epimedium, resveratrol, and rhizomadrinariae, specifically TFRD, seem to have the most compelling human data for improving BMD or fracture-related outcomes in relevant populations.
Okay, those are maybe the top tier for evidence. What's next?
Then you have herbs with promising human data. Maybe not for OP itself, but for closely related conditions or needing more confirmation. I'd put thyme, with its positive T-score data, Cissus quadrangularis, especially for fracture healing and slowing loss, and maybe Google, with osteoarthritis efficacy and an ongoing OP trial, in this category.
And many others have evidence mainly from formulas.
Yes, particularly herbs like Salvia miltiarisa, Danshin, and Panax notogenseng sanqi. The human evidence supporting their use for OP comes primarily from formula-based trials conducted in Asia. Encouraging, but isolating the effect of the single herb is harder.
And then there's a long list with strong preclinical data, but waiting for human trials.
Exactly. A vast amount of research has been done in labs and animals for herbs like turmeric, ginger, ligustrum, Romania, eucomia, sistanch, ashwagandha, Siberian ginseng. The list goes on. The bottleneck is often the funding and execution of large-scale, rigorous human clinical trials.
So from a practical perspective, what are the key takeaways for listeners navigating this? What's the most actionable advice?
Well, probably the safest, most accessible, and still evidence-informed strategy is to embrace those anti-inflammatory culinary herbs. Incorporating generous amounts of turmeric, ginger, rosemary, and thyme into your daily cooking is a fantastic, low-risk, high-reward approach. Their excellent safety profiles and known mechanisms make them a smart part of a holistic lifestyle for supporting bone health.
Easy enough to do. What about using the more potent medicinal herbs or supplements?
Two absolute non-negotiables here. First, quality matters immensely. You must seek out high-quality, standardized products from reputable manufacturers who do third-party testing. This is the only way to minimize the very real risks of contamination, like heavy metals and shilajit or adulteration, and to ensure you're actually getting the active compounds.
Okay, quality first. And second.
Second, and perhaps most critical, is being acutely aware of the potential for drug interactions. We cannot overstate this, especially for older adults who are often taking multiple prescription medications for other conditions, blood pressure, diabetes, blood thinners, etc. This is the single most important safety consideration.
Got it. Quality and interactions are paramount. Which brings us, I think, to our final unified conclusion. After exploring all this potential, what's the bottom line on using herbs for osteoporosis?
The bottom line, unequivocally, is that these herbal interventions should always be viewed as adjuncts to conventional medical care. They are not standalone cures, nor are they replacements for established treatments.
So the foundation remains the same.
Absolutely. The foundation of osteoporosis management remains a comprehensive plan developed with your healthcare provider. This likely includes ensuring adequate intake of calcium and vitamin D, engaging in regular weight-bearing and muscle-strengthening exercise, and potentially using pharmacotherapy like bisphosphonates or other approved medications when indicated.
And the herbs fit in around that foundation.
Exactly. Herbal supplements, when chosen carefully and used wisely under professional guidance, can be a powerful and beneficial addition to this foundational plan. They offer fascinating potential to modulate inflammation, support hormonal balance, maybe improve circulation to bone, and even directly influence bone remodeling pathways.
But potential that needs careful handling.
Precisely. This profound potential can only be realized safely and effectively through a collaborative and informed approach. It requires open communication and partnership between you and a knowledgeable physician or a qualified healthcare practitioner who understands both conventional medicine and the nuances of traditional herbal wisdom, including the critical aspects of quality, dosage, contraindications, and drug interactions. #outro.
Wow, what a deep dive that was. We've journeyed through, centuries of herbal wisdom from different traditions, unpacked some really fascinating molecular mechanisms, and critically evaluated the evidence and lack thereof for literally dozens of potential natural allies in the fight against osteoporosis.
It's a huge topic. We hope this detailed exploration empowers you, our listeners, to have more informed, more nuanced conversations with your own healthcare teams about what a truly holistic and integrated approach to your bone health might look like.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up, here's a final thought to leave you with, something sparked by our discussion on those complex traditional formulas.
Considering the remarkable multi-target action and the sophisticated toxicity mitigation strategies built into some of these traditional herbal formulas like Erzhian decoction or Xianlingu Bao, what might modern pharmacology learn from these centuries of observing natural synergy? Could that knowledge help develop even more effective and perhaps less toxic treatments for complex multifactorial diseases like osteoporosis in the future?
A really provocative question, something to definitely mull over. Keep that interplay between traditional wisdom and modern science in mind, and keep exploring the vast landscape of health and wellness with a critical, yet open and informed mind. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.